A private citizen thought Ohio wasn't doing enough to keep fracking waste out of sewage treatment plants there. So she took action.
I don't know if this is in my DNA, but I was just brought up that right is right and wrong is wrong. And if there's something that you can do, well, that's on you.
This week on the Allegheny Front, a woman takes on fracking. Plus, a rare cancer is affecting children in southwestern Pennsylvania. And some suspect it's related to the environment.
I said, you know, something's wrong here. Something's really wrong. For as rare as this disease is, how do we get three? Boom, boom, boom.
And an artist takes a closer look at urban trees.
I'm hoping that this work can spark a reconnection, because it's not decoration, it's not just fluff, it's not just for landscaping. They are critical for our health.
Those and more environmental stories are coming up on the Allegheny Front. Stay with us. A coalition of environmental groups sent an open letter to Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf and legislative leaders decrying a transfer of $10 million out of the Environmental Stewardship Fund in this year's state budget. State Impact Pennsylvania's Marie Cusick reports.
16 groups are criticizing lawmakers for moving money out of the fund, which was set up nearly two decades ago to support environmental programs in communities, including flooding and stormwater management, Chesapeake Bay cleanup efforts, and farmland preservation. The money would now be used for general government operating expenses. Joanne Kilgour heads the Pennsylvania chapter of the Sierra Club. She said the state is seeing even more strains on its built and natural environments.
It's absolutely the wrong direction to be decreasing rather than absolutely maximizing our commitment to supporting environmental programs and conservation through the state budget.
A spokesman for Governor Tom Wolf said the transfers would not cut previously allocated environmental projects, and he believes the changes will not affect or decrease the output from the Environmental Stewardship Fund. Marie Cusick, State Impact Pennsylvania.
This summer, we're examining what happens when gas companies impact local communities in Ohio. In the latest story in our series, Who's Listening?, the Allegheny Front's Julie Grant looks at what happened when the sewage treatment plant in Warren, near Youngstown, made a deal to accept fracking waste. Despite violating its discharge permit, Ohio regulators didn't step in until a private citizen and her attorney took matters into their own hands.
10 years ago, the fracking industry was already booming in Pennsylvania. But in Ohio, people were just starting to hear about it. Many were excited that it would help eastern Ohio's struggling rural economy. But Leatra Harper worried that the trade-off would be their health and the environment. Harper says her grandfather had died from black lung, and his father had worked to unionize coal miners. She started a group, the Freshwater Accountability Project, to protect Ohio waters from the next energy industry, natural gas.
I don't know if this is in my DNA, but I was just brought up that right is right and wrong is wrong. And if there's something that you can do, well, that's on you.
Each fracked well uses millions of gallons of water mixed with sand and chemicals. More than half of this brine water flows back to the surface as waste. Harper heard that a company called Patriot Water Treatment had started working with the city of Warren in eastern Ohio to start sending frack waste through their sewage treatment plant.
And this is what I always say, my trip down the rabbit hole with the fracking industry.
It started with Tom Angelo, who at the time was director of Warren's sewage plant.
Fracking was something that was of great interest. It had a lot of promise to it.
Angelo says by 2009, the local economy had tanked in the recession. Warren had lost millions in tax revenue, and even worse, it lost jobs for its residents.
I was looking at the fact that General Motors had shut down, Thomas Steel had shut down, RG Steel had shut down, Mitel Steel had shut down.
So Patriot's proposal to Warren came at a good time. Angelo says it promised $1 million a year in revenue.
So when you're looking at a $2.5 million deficit, you have choices.
The city chose to sign an agreement with Patriot. The company's president declined an interview. Angelo says Patriot would treat the frack waste, most of it from Pennsylvania and West Virginia, to remove heavy metals and other things before sending it to the city sewage plant. From there, it would flow to the Mahoning River. It wasn't long after this when pollutants found in fracking wastewater and linked with cancers and birth defects were found in Pennsylvania's waterways. The state's Department of Environmental Protection requested that drillers voluntarily stop sending wastewater to public sewage plants in Pennsylvania. Leatra Harper, who had started the Freshwater Group, wanted Warren, Ohio to follow their lead.
We took it upon ourselves to appeal directly to Tom Angelo, giving him our concerns along with some studies from the Ohio Department of Health showing high levels of radioactivity and other things that were completely ignored.
But at the state level, the Ohio EPA tried to take action. Environmental attorney Megan Hunter, who was working with Harper, says that as 2012 approached, Warren's treatment plant needed a new permit to discharge waste into the river. And the state agency had a surprise for the city in its renewal permit.
And Ohio EPA sticks a clause in there saying you can't accept oil and gas waste to the facility. That was Ohio EPA's backhanded way of saying no to Patriot.
Tom Angelo, then director of Warren's sewage plant, was mad. He says Patriot had built a $3.5 million facility based on previous approvals by the agency.
A government is not in the business of putting business out of business. A government is in business to promote it.
The Ohio EPA declined to comment for this story. Warren and Patriot sued the state. Documents from the case show that it was ambiguous whether the Ohio EPA or the Ohio Department of Natural Resources had responsibility to regulate the flow of frack waste through a public sewage plant. Patriot and the city prevailed in that case.
We won.
Warren's sewage plant was able to accept treated frack waste. Meanwhile, Hunter and Freshwater Accountability Project kept watch. Between 2014 and 2016, they saw violations. Patriot exceeded the pollution limits in its agreement with the city for things like zinc, ammonia, and in one case, 68 times the limit of total dissolved solids, which includes salts known to come from frack waste.
So you just, you know, go through years and years of evidence and you're seeing all of these violations.
By this time, Tom Angelo had retired from the city and started consulting for Patriot. The environmental advocates, meanwhile, found emails from the new director of Warren's sewage treatment plant outlining the impact of Patriot's pollution violations to city leaders.
He laid out in those emails that that waste from Patriot was so high in TDS, so high in salts, that it was harming their ability to process their own waste.
But the city continued to allow Patriot's waste to flow through the sewage plant. Hunter says the government wasn't reacting, even though Patriot was clearly violating its permits.
And a violation of a term of a discharge permit is a violation of the Clean Water Act. And that means a citizen can access what's called the citizen suit provision of the Clean Water Act. And they can file what's called a notice of intent to sue, and that's what we did.
Freshwater's lawsuit was filed in 2017, and within a month, Warren stopped accepting frack waste from Patriot. The city settled out of court with the Freshwater Accountability Project earlier this year. We reached out to the mayor, who did not return our calls. The city services director declined to comment. But Leatra Harper with Freshwater Accountability has been vilified as a radical environmentalist who costs the city money. Harper says she put her group's finances on the line for the public. Frack waste was harming the city's own treatment plant and potentially the drinking water for thousands of people downstream. And no one, not the city, not Ohio regulators, was stopping the industry until her lawsuit.
Kind of as a last resort, of course, when all reason fails. But it's very, very expensive. And sometimes it's hard to find people to really stand up to that industry because it's so huge and they have all the money and we don't.
But now the U.S. EPA is shutting down this whole question. As of August 29th this year, the federal regulator is prohibiting public sewage plants across the country from accepting frack wastewater. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Julie Grant.
Our series about fracking in Ohio is supported by the Fund for Investigative Journalism and the Sear Sweatland Family Foundation. For all of the stories in the series, go to AlleghenyFront.org/who's listening. A special day of prayer and blessings brings environmental activists and residents together.
And our Mother Earth is something, the common ground that we all stand upon. We're looking for something that we need, that bond and that connection.
Later on the Allegheny front, a call to protect the earth and water from fossil fuel extraction. Stay tuned. The walls of artist Ashley Cecil's studio are covered with flora and fauna, the shapes of different bird species cut from brown paper, bold images of flowers in pink and green. The space reflects Cecil's tenure as artist in residence at some of Pittsburgh's major nature and science institutions, the Carnegie Museum of Natural History, Phipps Conservatory, and a herpetology lab at the University of Pittsburgh. She's just finished another one, this time at Tree Pittsburgh, a nonprofit which protects and grows the city's urban forest. I visited Cecil at her studio to talk about the art she's produced from the 6 months she spent at the organization's headquarters and nursery.
So what draws you to this intersection of art and science and nature?
In 2015, I did a really loose, I guess you would call it residency project, where I hopped around the National Aviary, the Natural History Museum, and a few other places, adding specimens from each of those locations to a series of paintings. And it was really for the aesthetic of it. But as I started asking the staff, what happened to that bird? Why is it dead? I started getting these very elaborate answers based on science about what's happening to nature because of human impact, and it just opened the floodgates. There was no going back.
So you've spent 6 months at Tree Pittsburgh, which has a nursery along the Allegheny River. What did you learn about trees there that you didn't know before?
I was sort of embarrassed that I probably at the outset of the project could only tell you that they produced oxygen, that they were probably good for our home values, really surface level things. I was blown away by what I learned from reading research from individuals like Francis Kuo, who was in Pittsburgh last year receiving the Heinz Environmental Award, for her research that showed really surprising things like having a green landscape in a city reduces urban crime rates. But then on the health front, the public health front, how it reduces asthma rates, how it mitigates stormwater runoff. When you hear about these landslides in Pittsburgh, because of all this additional really quick rainfall, these flash floods that we're having, to me they seem to be happening more frequently. I mean, that's something trees can help with. But we come up with these grand like infrastructure projects to help mitigate that, all the while we're cutting down more trees for development, which seems really backwards.
Well, why don't you show me some of the pieces?
Yeah. A good place to start are these Kentucky coffee tree seed pods. I was given these by Joe Stavish at Tree Pittsburgh. He's the education manager. He uses these for a activity that he does with children to talk about the importance of humans being stewards of trees, because this tree co-evolved with megafauna like the woolly mammoth. It was a rare creature that had the ability to take off the hard coating of the seeds through its digestive system that allowed the seed to germinate once it came out the other end. But now that that creature is gone, this tree is dwindling. We don't see it as often.
Are you saying this tree has been around since the woolly mammoths?
Yes. Yes, it has. So it relies on humans now because it doesn't have the creature that it co-evolved with. And it's important because this tree species is really fantastic for urban settings. It's drought tolerant. It can also tolerate really poor soil, and it's also disease resistant, which is really key. So we need more of these trees in our city settings because it thrives there.
Just describe what the seed pods look like. They're very large.
They're huge. Most of them are at least 6 inches long. They kind of have like this messy banana shape to them, but they're dark brown. Yeah, they're kind of rough looking, right? So what I've done to bring something to draw you into them is that I've taken actual gold and I've drawn the mature tree leaves and the flowers that this tree produces on them. So they're these delicate gold drawings of what the tree looks like when we involve ourselves in ensuring that the species continues to thrive, to basically illustrate like what beauty comes of this. So one of the main themes in this show is what I've been calling reciprocal service. And that is getting at the point that to gain these benefits from trees, we have to be involved in their care, their planning, and their maintenance. So I've created a contemporary twist on a French toile wallpaper where I've created four vignettes. Two of the vignettes are of people caring for trees. This includes actually Tree Pittsburgh staff in the tree nursery. And then we've got a family underneath a fruit tree picking some apples. And this pattern is repeated all over the show, but they're also put onto textiles and home decor products like pillows and chairs. And even I've upcycled some vintage plates with these patterns that have been refired with those vignettes on them. And the whole idea is that this philosophy of caring for trees should be in everyday life. We're bringing that into the home in the similar way that the decorative arts and the arts and crafts movement had done, that this love of flora and fauna is in and around us every day, and not just up on a pedestal like art is considered sometimes, but used for dinnerware and in our homes in everyday use.
There's a lot of art about trees. There's poetry, there are paintings. I mean, just going back as far as we have representation of, what do you want people to think or feel about trees when they see your work at this moment in time?
I want them to think of them more than decorative. I feel like we've lost touch with why they're important. And I'm hoping that this work can spark a reconnection, because it's not decoration, it's not just fluff, it's not just for landscaping. They are critical for our health, and it's diminishing. We're losing our tree canopy. Every year it goes down a little bit more. We're losing some to development. We're also losing them because of disease. We're also losing them because of invasive species that are being introduced that these trees just can't tolerate and will wipe out an entire species. And in the city, I mean, my goodness, they are given these teeny little plots of land along streets to absorb all the water they need, which is typically inadequate, as well as having to face the utility companies that are constantly cutting them back. So there's a lot of attacks that we have to face, and that can be done through ordinances, it can be done through tree plantings, a variety of ways, which is why I'm really thrilled to draw people into Tree Pittsburgh, because they're really on the front line. So I want people to understand that importance and to realize that we need to be actively engaged as stewards.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Ashley Cecil is an artist based in Pittsburgh who recently finished a residency at the nonprofit Tree Pittsburgh. Her exhibit there is called Fruitful, and you can see it through September 26th. There are also photographs of some of the pieces at AlleghenyFront.org. This is The Allegheny Front. I'm Kara Holsapple. The Pennsylvania Department of Health says there's no cancer cluster in a Washington County school district. But those who've been affected by the high occurrence of rare tumors there want the state to take a closer look to see if the natural gas industry or other environmental causes could be to blame. For State Impact Pennsylvania, the Allegheny Front's Reed Frazier has more.
Cindy Vallant is sitting in a booth at a Panera telling the story of her youngest son, Kurt.
He had a smile that would light up a room. Just everybody loved him, you know, because he just had that personality, a magnet personality.
In his first year in college, Kurt started complaining about a pain in his shoulder. A doctor told him it was probably from sleeping on it wrong, but the pain wouldn't go away. A year later, Kurt got a bitter diagnosis, Ewing sarcoma, an extremely rare form of bone cancer.
And he had a very small tumor in his shoulder, but he had a mass in his liver. It was in his liver, lungs, lymph node, and spleen.
Kurt Vallant died 3 years later in 2011. Over the next few years, two other young men in their town of Cecil both died of Ewing sarcoma, which only occurs in about 200 new cases a year in the U.S.
And I said, you know, something's wrong here. Something's really wrong. For as rare as this disease is, how do we get three? Boom, boom, boom.
Among Cindy Vallant's first thoughts was maybe fracking had something to do with Kurt's cancer. More than 1,800 deep shale gas wells have been drilled and fracked in Washington County, the most in the state. Initially, she thought the industry would be good for the farmers in her county, who'd leased their land for drilling.
We'd see that must be the oil rig out there flaring up. Look at that, lighting up the sky. Never, never, ever would I have connected
any of this till after Kurt had passed away.
As was first reported in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, three other cases of Ewing sarcoma were identified in the same school district where the Valance lived. And a dozen more cases were identified in nearby Westmoreland County. Now, many in the community want answers. At a recent public meeting, Janice Blanock, whose son Luke was Kurt Valance's neighbor and who also died of Ewing sarcoma, says she doesn't know if anything caused her son's cancer, but she wants the state to find out.
No parent should ever have to watch their child suffer and die, especially when there is even the slightest possibility that it's something in the environment that could be causing.
The Pennsylvania Department of Health looked at the cancer cases in Washington County. It found rates of Ewing sarcoma weren't, quote, consistently or statistically significantly higher than expected there. But that study excluded two recent cases of Ewing sarcoma and one case where the patient's address was misidentified. Ned Kattire, a pediatrician with the Children's Health Alliance, told the crowd there's no shortage of potentially harmful environmental hazards in the area. Acid mine drainage, former uranium and radium sites, and fracking.
Harmful emissions from expanding unconventional natural gas infrastructure, including carcinogenic and endocrine-disrupting chemicals and radiation into the air and water, seriously has to be investigated.
No one from the Department of Health or the governor's office agreed to an interview for this story. Governor Tom Wolf released a statement that said the state had thoroughly regulated the natural gas industry. The industry agrees it's stringently regulated and rejects any attempt to link its practices to any disease. Unlike other cancers, Ewing sarcoma has no known environmental causes. But Evelyn Talbot of the University of Pittsburgh's Graduate School of Public Health says there's some evidence linking pesticide exposure with the disease. She says the best way to test for a cause would be to conduct what's called a case control study. That's where scientists compare information from people who have gotten a disease with a control group of similar people who have not.
Do they have the same background levels of genetic damage, if you're looking at genetic damage, or the same background exposures in your blood?
The Department of Health hasn't yet said whether it's going to conduct any follow-up studies, but said it will review more data as it comes in. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Reed Frazier.
On Friday, June 21st, the summer solstice, environmental activists, indigenous communities, leaders of faith, and city officials gathered on the banks of the Allegheny River in Pittsburgh to celebrate World Peace and Prayer Day and raise awareness about water issues. About 50 people attended the event, which included Seneca water rituals and a march on the Andy Warhol Bridge. The Allegheny Front's Jack Austin was there.
You want to go ahead and raise the energy. Nibi wabo endayen, aki mi squi nibi wabo, heya, heya.
Thank you, my friend. Thank all of you for coming out to this wonderful, beautiful, powerful ceremony.
My name is Brianne Moy, and I am a regional organizer with the Climate Reality Project. First and foremost, I'd say I believe in showing solidarity with lots of different groups and communities who are working in their own ways to, you know, combat the ecological and climate devastation that we're currently experiencing. And I think the World Peace and Prayer Day is something that's traditionally rooted in indigenous communities.
Diga wononda snigyaso agatayoni ononawaga ni a ohio jonegano. And the translation of that is, my name is He Who Thunders, I am. And I'm of the Wolf Clan. And I'm of the people of the Great Hill, better known as Seneca. And I reside along the Allegheny, Ohio, the beautiful river in Jonegano, which we call Cold Spring, down in our ancestral territory. The shared responsibility is the water, and that we're here to encourage you for the protection of the waters. We're out of balance, but now we have these attacks that are made upon us by these
fossil fuel industries and the natural gas industry. And then I honor our Mother Earth. And our Mother Earth is something, the common ground that we all stand upon. We're looking for something that we need, that bond and that connection.
Okay, what we're going to do next is we're going to invite you up. What we'll have you do is you can dip a small portion of the water and take the opportunity to speak to the water, physically speak to it, put your intentions into it.
My name is Davanna Schreiner. I live in currently Hazelwood. Well, this drum was made specifically for a sacred rite, and it is the first time that it is being brought out in public today. So, and I thought it was a very important event to do that at.
Hi, I'm Terry Supowitz. I live in Wilkinsburg. My claim to fame is that Wilkinsburg has a ban on fracking, and that's because of what I did. And I have a license that says H2O, life. Without clean water, we can't survive. So, and the fact that this is a connection to indigenous people, that's important to me.
Yes, we all take our left foot back and our hands to our belly button, and we say inner peace.
Inner peace.
And we take our right foot back and our hands out, like this, and we say outer peace. You guys remember? All right, then you put your hands above your head.
Upper peace.
And we say world peace.
World peace.
Then we bring our hands to our hearts and we say one love.
One love.
It's part of a community gathering that we celebrate both peace and understanding, and part of that comes through sustainability. So I'm convinced that on our long scale development of this city, as we look at sustainability as a key component of it, it has many different factors of what that means. And today's march is a part of that. We have to realize that we're all in this together. The only way that you see that change happens is once we all gather together, citizens, institutions, nonprofits, organizations, government, and corporations, to be able to say, this is our home and we need to take care of it.
Earth is my body, water is my blood, wind is my breath, and fire is my spirit. So let's hit it!
That last voice was Pittsburgh Mayor Bill Peduto. And you also heard the voice of activist Kevin May and the singing of Wheat Saline. That story was produced by the Allegheny Front's student intern, Jack Austin. Thanks for joining us on the Allegheny Front. You can always find us on Facebook and Twitter at Allegheny Front. Kathy Naur is the executive producer of our show. I'm Carol Holsapel.
Support for the Allegheny Front comes from the Heinz Endowments, the Pittsburgh Foundation, and the Park Foundation. The Richard King Mellon Foundation supports our coverage of conservation, the Sears Sweatland Family Foundation supports our coverage in Ohio, and the Robert F. Schumann Foundation supports our podcast, Trump on Earth. State Impact Pennsylvania is a collaboration among the Allegheny Front, WESA, WITF, and WHYY to cover the Commonwealth's energy economy.